Hello and welcome to How to Save the World. This is a podcast about sustainability and my name is Tim. I'm one of the hosts.
And I'm Waveney, I'm the other host.
And today we're talking about something quite interesting, potentially kind of big and anamorphous, but something really important and something that often we don't talk about as people, and that is how to be happy. Talking about happiness. And this is off the back of Waveney and I were having a conversation recently about how messed up it is that such a default response to having a crappy day or when you're in a low mood at the moment, you want to cheer yourself up, is you buy something. And this is as a result of the culture that we've all grown up in the last 40 or 50 years of sort of consumerism just running rampant and people expressing who they are, their individuality through the brands that they choose and being encouraged to lift their mood through purchases.
Yeah, it's the new normal, isn't it?
It is. We've all sort of been brainwashed into thinking that that's how you make yourself happy through advertising. And the thing is, that's not such a turns out it's not a fantastic long-term approach to gaining happiness for yourself, but it's also really detrimental for the planet to just keep buying random stuff every time you want to cheer yourself up. So we thought that we would try and tackle a few suggestions on more sustainable, both from a human point of view and a planet point of view, how to be happy.
Yeah, totally. And of course, it's really relevant as well. Because neither of us are actually feeling that happy right now.
Not a lot of people are feeling super stoked right now. And yeah, Everyone's a little bit tired and on edge and
uncertain. Things are uncertain. And then even like, you know, this idea of being able to go and shop to be happy. It's like we're now sort of wondering if it's even okay to get out into these public places and shop. And we're sort of either panic buying or trying to avoid the shops completely.
Totally. And we've also just celebrated or observed World Happiness Day, which was on Friday.
Yeah, no, Saturday it was.
Oh, Saturday.
The 20th. It's International World Happiness Day, one of those classics who knew things. Doesn't seem to be a big thing, but it's a thing. There's links to International Day of Happiness on the show notes. Oh, and the other thing to mention while we are being topical is that this Saturday is Earth Hour.
I remember Earth Hour.
I know, it's kind of a bit old school now.
It's been away for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, apparently. And it's back in full force. It's one of the biggest things that get actually celebrated in terms of the environment annually. The great thing about this is that it's really, it's something you can do at home. It's something you can do in self-isolation. Just from 8:30 p.m., just for 1 hour, you try and power down everything. And it's actually one of my favourite things, is to have like just candles around and screens off. Yeah.
It's a really cool symbolic gesture of unity across the world that brings everyone together to just remember that, you know, the planet that we're on, we're not treating very well. Mm. So, yeah, it's a really cool act of solidarity to, in whatever way that you can, throw down and join in on Earth Day. Mm.
And there's a website for New Zealanders too that are interested in what they can be doing. But of course, no gatherings. And the other thing, sorry, it's all turning a bit newsy, but March, of course, is the month that I was trying to just wear 6 items of clothing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of during, well, getting near the end of March. Seems to be going on forever, the beginning of the March. Feels like it was 2 years ago now. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. But, I don't know. It turns out that it's easy. I don't really have much to say about it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and I've been enjoying it. And I think that some situations are easier than others for people. We had a woofer with us, which is one of the a worker on organic farms. So it's a voluntary exchange. They work for food and rent. So we had a woofer, and of course woofers are usually international. We had them with us arriving, and then they needed to go into self-isolation, and then she started freaking out that she was not going to be able to get back home because the borders might close. Mm-hmm. She lives in San Francisco, so we ended up, one thing led to the next, and we ended up doing this emergency dash to the airport on Tuesday and last week. And I knew that I was coming to Auckland for 3 days, and so I packed my bag in like 30 seconds. It was awesome. I was like, well, that's easy. It's just these 6 things, and I was wearing half of them anyway.
Yeah.
So gosh, I was like, yeah, that I would really have struggled to do that and would have arrived here in Auckland without a basic thing I needed. But I actually found that really quite telling. And I thought, how much time have I been wasting in my life picking outfits? And then, you know, I also haven't had time to, because remember how I counted up all the things and I had 77 items that I could have picked from. And I realized I just haven't had time to put them away. I thought it'd be quite nice to have just an empty wardrobe, but they're all still just sitting there. And I just kind of feeling a bit negative towards them now. I actually am wanting to have a bit of a purge.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's a great outcome.
Yeah.
You said there wasn't a lot to report. I think that's an awesome thing to figure out about your wardrobe.
Oh, it's true. And it links back into happiness. I think that's one of the bizarre, unintended consequences of us buying stuff and stuff being so cheap, is that it does linger in our lives and pull us down a bit.
Totally. And I don't know where I heard this from. Sounds like an Oprah thing maybe, but the fact that in terms of stuff that you own, it doesn't just occupy a place in your house, but it occupies a place in your brain as well.
And the things you own end up owning you.
Exactly. So if you can end up, if you can try and get rid of that clutter, that stuff that you don't need to own around you, you can find some incredible mental health benefits from that as well, because you're not kind of lugging these objects around in your brain either.
I have a thing about these boxes I've been lugging around since Mum and Dad said you need to get rid of your crap from childhood. And I kind of fantasize about them being destroyed accidentally, but every time I lift the lids to see if I can do it myself and just rehome stuff and get rid of stuff, I can't do it.
That's interesting, hey?
Yeah, anyway.
Feeds very much into our episode on psychology and happiness, I think.
It does, eh? It does. I thought we could start maybe by looking at the foundations of human happiness.
Cool. Got 3 hours, folks.
Well, and this is a weird thing, but by way to clarify what it is to be human, I thought if we just okay, I've got four species, and I'm going to say what makes this one happy, and I just want you to say the first thing that comes to your head. What makes dogs happy?
Running.
And people.
Yep.
They love their owners. What makes rabbits happy?
Food.
And security. I think they like being in their little burrows. Yeah. What makes tigers happy?
Hunting?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably. The thing is that they're all very different. What makes humans happy?
People.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's basically exactly how I thought this might go. It's like you just spit it out and that's it. It's like that is the absolute foundation. This isn't the Waveney Worth version of the world. This is what the social scientists and the researchers are telling us, and it's what we know in our hearts, is that we're a really social species and we thrive when we're closely connected to others. So everything else is secondary, and we can do, you know, a top 10 list of all these different things, but and social connection is a hard thing to just go out and get.
Yeah.
And so that's something I think to be mindful of as we talk about this stuff, is that we have a broader context for our happiness or lack of happiness, and it's like, how can we support each other to move into situations that are more happiness conducive?
I like that.
Yeah. How can we support?
Well, I think this flows back to how we sort of framed up this episode, because it seems like Western societies are structured in a way that isolates people and atomizes us and doesn't build community. It sort of treats us quite individualistically.
Unintended consequences, I think, too. Like, if we look at the freedoms that we have had in the last 50 years, the flip side to be able to travel anywhere at low cost or go anywhere is that we're making choices all the time. And so some people kind of the winners on that, and other people are the losers. So it used to be that we didn't have a choice who we hung out with. You were stuck in your little area, and you, regardless of how unfortunate your neighbour was or the local baker was or whatever, that was that.
We were forced
into these relationships, whereas now we choose our relationships. And so there's some people that just are on the out of that.
Yeah.
And that's an unintended consequence of technology and positive things, all the things that we love about our lives, being able to, you know, if you look at your friend network, it's not your neighbours, is it?
that's the thing. That's an interesting point. Your friends are people who you were kind of, generally speaking, thrust into a situation with that you had no control over. They're people who you got put into a class with at school, who end up being your best mates that you carry through, or people that you work with who you're like, oh yeah, these are cool people. I'm going to hang out with them outside of work hours, or you might join a hobby. But like, the thing about anyone who you meet, it's usually through a situation that you don't really control.
No, well, yeah, I reckon that my friends have been people that I have met through choices I've made.
What sort of choices?
What suburb I want to live in, who I want to flat with, what university I wanted to attend.
Yeah, so that's the choice you make, but you don't choose who the people are that occupy that suburb or university or workplace.
No, but it's a subset of the general population.
True, yeah.
I haven't bumped into many people in my life that work in, say, forestry.
Right,
logging, factories. But aside from the fact that we're this social species, this is happiness, as we know, is a topic that gets very well researched. And I've come up with a list of that I've condensed of 10 things that the researchers say make all humans happy. This is this going back to that foundational stuff. So in addition to our social connection, shall I rattle through?
Please.
Yeah, some... So it's really interesting. And the thing that struck me about this list actually is just how it's surprisingly uncommodified. Like, it's not coffee and chocolate. It's like the first thing is caring for others. I don't think this is a list that's in order. Number 10 is sex. So it's probably not. Or which order? Who knows? But so caring for each other, growing up. That's interesting.
Growing up.
Yeah, we get happier as we get older.
Wow.
Thinking positive, which is, of course, easier said than done, but traits of thinking positive include being grateful and being optimistic and just really relishing how lucky you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is probably something that is a tool that we could harness if we were more mindful. Exercise, nature, culture, pets, volunteering. Experiences. So experiences over objects. It's experiences that make us happy, not things, mm-hmm. typically, and sex.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's a cool list. And as one of my favorite comedians says, you know, sex is on the list. It's free fun, folks. It's free fun. I did sort of a slight deep dive on a couple of those, just to ones that we kind of, well, exercise, for example, we get told all the time, and we sort of know in our heart of hearts it's intrinsically true that exercise makes us happy. But I was like, I want to find the science that actually backs that up.
Awesome. Go, do tell.
Well, there was a paper written by Dr. Daniel M. Landers from Arizona State University, who is an expert on mental health, and he basically was drawing on meta-analyses. So meta-analysis in science literature is when you do a study of studies. So he's looking at an area which is the interaction of physical exercise and its effect on mental health. And as a researcher, you will look at all of the existing research already and draw on what the trends are from all of those findings.
Yep.
And meta-analysis is really useful because you've got such a huge sample size that you don't get big distortions in the data that can happen when you've got a one-off study that maybe has just a few people that you are testing on.
Yep.
So it can really normalize results and you can have a lot more confidence in the results that come from a meta-analysis.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
So his paper is called The Influence of Exercise on Mental Health, and it was written ages ago. This is from January 1997. And I'll just rattle off a couple of things that are in there. Top line: we now have the evidence to support the claim that exercise is related to positive mental health, as indicated by relief in symptoms of depression and anxiety. So here are some features or benefits that Dr. Daniel Landers has found in his meta-analysis of the existing studies out there. Mental health benefits of physical activity reduced anxiety. The best results for that were with anaerobic exercise. It was best after weeks of regular exercise. So when you first kick off, you might get some initial benefits, but you get real benefits if you stay with it for a few weeks. Best benefits to those who have low fitness to begin with. So that means that if you're currently really inactive, you might find a huge uptick in your mental health if you start engaging with physical exercise regularly. Best benefits for those high in anxiety to begin with. So if you're quite a highly strung or stressed out person, this could be a really effective way to battle that. Reduce depression, very effective when done several times a week. Best with more vigorous exercise. So I guess that means if you really push yourself, challenge yourself physically, you'll get the best results. Very effective for those who are more depressed. So
there's definitely a theme coming through here, isn't there?
The kind of lower ebb that you're in, the more the benefit better. You can find through physical exercise. Benefits, anxiety and depression, similar to those for other treatments. So that means that physical exercise can be analogous in its benefits to medication and therapy for some, not for all, but for some. Activity is associated with positive self-esteem. And that's really important because that's kind of part of a positive feedback loop to break you out of existing cycles. I've been reading a little bit in a slightly different context about obsessive compulsive disorders and its relationship to addiction, because they're quite similar in the brain, how those things work. And
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's all about trying to, because those things get really, what it is in the brain, my limited understanding is that you get trapped. You get really trapped in these loops, these negative mental loops. And you can think of it in terms of a language loop where you're constantly beating yourself up and you keep repeating the same negative, unhelpful, unhealthy messaging over and over again. Or you could think of it in a neurophysical way where you are constantly strengthening certain pathways in your brain and those pathways are not useful or healthy, but they get more and more strong because it's becomes the path of least resistance. You're like, I'm unworthy, I'm ugly, I'm stupid, whatever. And you keep repeating those things and they get more and more ingrained. And things like exercise, in the context that I've been looking into it, is psychedelic substances can help break those enforced loops that are happening all the time.
Sorry, just to jump in there, that's quite powerful.
Yeah.
Because it feels like a lot of these things, if you're not feeling happy, and that can be like a longer term ebb or even a day-to-day thing. That's the time when it's the hardest to start a new habit, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you've got to really be on top of things to decide, I'm going to go for a run for the first time.
Totally.
And just to hear that and to hear, yes, it's really, really worth it. And to be able to, I guess, just make a commitment, mind over matter, and have a real sense that this is really going to be worth it. Maybe if you give yourself 3 weeks.
Totally. And in my experience, everything is just about starting.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you're doing, how much you do. Like, if you've got an exercise goal or something, it starts with you lacing up your trainers and getting out the door. And if you end up walking for 6 minutes to the lamppost and coming back in, you've done something.
Yeah.
And
that's the point, isn't it? Once you are walking,
you've broken that groove.
Then you go, oh, I might as well keep going.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The last thing on the list from this meta-analysis is activity associated with restful sleep. So that's a really useful one because, again, that has a lot of flow-on effects.
Sorry, meaning if you exercise, you're more likely to have a restful sleep?
Correct. Yeah.
Makes
there's
so much
a
sense.
Really strong correlation between those two things. And obviously, sleep actually feeds into a bit, like it's another one of these positive feedback loops that can happen because there's a lot of physical health ramifications for getting restful sleep. Your immune system is a lot stronger.
Yes, it's when we do our healing, isn't it?
Totally.
Good sleep. Yeah.
And your mental health increases. It goes both ways. If you're not having good sleep, it can take a huge hit very easily. And if you're getting good sleep, it can really help to combat that. So exercise is how you get that good restful sleep.
And the other thing about exercise, it's not necessarily true, but it's very easily something you can do outside. Like, it's often associated with being outside. And that's another aspect finding happiness. Yeah. So there's nature, which is like the gold standard. But even just being outside is good. It's really good.
And unless the guidelines have changed with the current stuff that's happening, like, being outside is actually all good. And going for a run is, is, if you're feeling healthy at the moment, a cool thing for you to do. The big concern at the moment is about congregated groups inside of small restricted spaces, but if you're outside going for a walk or going for a run,
it's perfect.
Cool.
I've got like a random one, and it's just around being mindful of what it is that really gives you happiness and stepping out of, like you're talking about, these pathways where we just go down because they're easier. And one thing I did a few years ago when I wasn't feeling very happy was I made myself my own personal list of things that made me super happy. And this is not research backed, but I'm pretty
you
sure.
You researched it on yourself?
I did. And I'm pretty sure it's, you know, a very good thing to do. It certainly worked for me. So I realized that I just wasn't experiencing on a day to day or even a week or even a month to month basis the things that I loved that really, really made me happy. I somehow had found myself in a life where I was separated from a lot of basic stuff that I loved, mm-hmm. Which you can't just go out and buy. And so anyway, I wrote myself this list of things that make me super happy. And I called it a five senses list because I just use that as a technique to really think through, like, you know, is it a particular meal that I like or a smell or a feeling. And so I just started to get a bit more aware of that stuff, wrote it all down. And then given that my pathways and patterns weren't steering me towards those things, I felt that I needed to take it an extra step and be really intentional about trying to get some of that stuff back into my life. Mm-hmm. So I put a standing meeting into my diary for like a Sunday afternoon. And then I would plan for that time, which one of these activities am I going to try and do? How much get it in my life?
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to share any?
Well, I didn't lose that list. I threw it away because when I moved to Rainbow Valley, which is just an old permaculture farm up north in Matakana, my life changed a lot. And I suddenly had all of these, I'm almost all of the things on the list, because it's things for me like watching the stars at night or sitting around a campfire. Those are the sorts of things I really love.
Well, and that's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder if that's not accidental, that you actually sat down, made the time, made the list, huh. And then it just happened.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that.
That you wound up in this context that fulfilled all of those things.
So I thought, I just felt like it was just, I'll get rid of that list. But then thinking about this episode and then thinking about that, I did actually sit down again and just come up with what's true for me now, so I can read it out if you like.
Yeah, I'd love
that. There's some random things on it. And also I wasn't trying to edit out the things that weren't environmentally friendly. So you'll hear some things on the list that you think, oh, well, that's got a bit of a carbon footprint. But it's just like you can make those choices after you've written your list. And for me, and I think for most of us, because we really just want to connect or be with nature or whatever it is, it's like so much of it's just so simple. Anyway, here's my list. Sitting around a campfire, playing with kids, patting a dog, looking at the stars, sitting in the sun. I love sitting in the sun. Hanging out with big groups of friends, live music. Swinging makes me happy, like in the sense of in a hammock. in a hammock or on a swing. Climbing a tree, I love. Sailing, I love. Storms and lightning. Being in the tropics, swimming in the tropics, spas, red wine, a plate with food that we grew, playing Twister, playing laser
strike.
Relates
back to the swinging.
Yeah, it's definitely a swinger thing. No. Muscle in Antarctica makes me happy. Power cuts at night make me happy so we can get the candles out. Swooping native birds, smell of vanilla. Traffic light drinks with those little paper umbrellas.
Yeah.
Devonport Folk Music Clubhouse Bunker is the coolest place on earth. Surprise beer gardens. I love that. You walk in somewhere and, oh, look what's out back. cooking dinner with house music cranking and flamingos.
I love it. None of those are not environmentally friendly by the sounds of it.
Well, getting to the tropics might have a bit of a footprint.
I guess that's true, unless you sail there. Yeah, which true. Incorporates hey, another yeah, one of yeah, your
through a storm. So
what a great list.
I think I would take that list and I would look at it and go, well, what can I do this Sunday?
Yeah.
You know, like, can I have a campfire? No, probably not. But could I find a dog to pet, probably, or climb a tree, probably.
And it seems like the first step to this is actually just hitting pause for one moment and going, hold on, what actually does make me happy? Because that's the other thing about the lives that we're leading so much at the moment, and why there's this weird underlying phenomenon at the moment where people seem to be taking a breath while in self-isolation and in an enforced unemployment state, where people are like, oh my God, thank God I can just like sleep in for you know, half an hour more, or just not have to worry about that thing at work.
It highlights our freneticness.
Absolutely. And I think that that will be something that we carry through this massive global tragedy, which could be a positive outcome about how we think about our lives, is just a little bit more attention to that frenetic way that we've all been living, and how an enforced shutdown felt. And there was, there's a lot of fear, obviously, and rightly so about this, but a little bit of relief from the work thing.
Yeah, I'm hearing that from so many people, and I feel it myself too.
Yeah,
just, yeah, no, it's interesting.
And all the things on your list are like, they're simple and they're attainable.
It might just be me though.
But I think so many people would have a similar. If you really think about the things that bring you joy in your life, they're not complicated or expensive. And I think but that makes them tricky is it's just about being intentional about setting your time and going, I want to sit in the sun and read a book for an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And then some of those things, I mean, I could have also added on, I love team sports, like a bit of soccer, a bit of volleyball. And I have found all through my life, it's so hard to connect. Like, unless you're already in a school, or you're involved in a club of some sort, it's really hard to find a group of six other people that want to go and muck around with a ball with you on a Sunday afternoon. And so there's some things that make us happy I think that's why we can fall into buying stuff, because we can do that.
Yes.
It's like there's no barriers.
Well, we have geared everything to making that as easy as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you can be on your phone and buy
Yeah, but you can't go and buy a soccer game with your mates.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, I can go to the mall. So it's like, how do we just, well, I think acknowledging that is really important. It's like, yes, these things are simple, but
totally,
we have to actually think through how we can solve some of them.
Well, I'm very into using the weapons of capitalism against itself. So these big things that we hate, like Facebook and that, which are employing literal, like, you know, neuroscientists and stuff to find out how we can addict people more to a social network website. I mean,
yeah, we've both seen how hard it is going on, to post. It's like, as soon as you're on there, there's this crazy platform that's distracting you.
And not for nothing. They've got billions of dollars and they invest it into tricking you into staying on there. And it's such a waste of time and mental energy. Mm. But if you're a little bit more intentional and you take some agency yourself, you can use those things to connect with people in your community and arrange a soccer game that you want to do on the weekend or a house party or whatever. Mm. And so it's just about, like, I think intentionality is a big word that's been floating around in my head for a little while now, and I'm not quite walking the path, but I'm thinking a lot more about it. Because in the absence of being intentional at the moment, there's so many things which have had huge investment of time and money and smart people to distract you and to take your attention and your time off of you.
Mm.
And we need to, like, fight back against that.
Mm.
I did a little bit of research into one other aspect on your list, and that's helping people.
Oh, cool.
From a science background, because this is something that I anecdotally myself have found is really consistently brings happiness and joy, is helping other people, working in the service of others. And if you read or just like listen to any kind of smart people who, I don't know, work as activists or historical figures that have been part of movements or what have you, so many of them talk about the joy, the implicit joy that comes from helping others and being part of something bigger than yourself and fighting on behalf of others who don't have the power to fight for themselves. And it doesn't have to be that grandiose or political whatsoever. The simple act of volunteering is a really good thing to do for your own happiness.
Would you go as far to recommend that someone volunteers and gets in that space, even if they couldn't think of anything worse? Like, you know, do you think it's something
Absolutely.
That could, yeah, it could really...
Absolutely. Because
like
the
exercise,
worst,
really similar to exercise. It's like bloody hard. Don't want to do it.
The very worst thing that's going to happen is you go, this isn't for me, and that's fine. And it's actually really unlikely that that would happen.
Mm.
One that really surprised me, it was last year I had volunteered because I just found in my I started going on the Volunteer Auckland website. So there's actually some really great resources out there if you're in this headspace, where usually registered charities will put on roles that they need filled. And so there's a Volunteers Auckland, there's Volunteers Wellington. If you just Google it, the website will come up and you can see what expertise and time you have to offer to a particular thing. So I was doing some bucket collection for the Neurological Foundation and Red Cross and SPCA at supermarkets, which is really awesome. Easy. You just roll out for a couple hours with a bib on. But one that came up was this camp for teenagers, which was 4 days, I think, that was in their school holidays. And it was sort of a combination leadership camp and people who were struggling, young people who were struggling a bit at school, and there were a lot of pathways to get onto that camp. So some parents paid for their kids to go, but there were a lot of scholarships as well for people who didn't have the means to send their kids. And the age group was like 11 would have been the youngest kids and up to 16 or maybe, I think 16 was the oldest. And I'd never done anything like that before. But they had such a great system in place because they've been doing it for 20 years that they brought you through 2 days of really intensive training and you formed this incredible bonded connection with the other people who were volunteering from super different walks
that
of life.
So cool. So you just did that. Totally like cold calling. Saw it online and
Saw it online and did it. And there's opportunities out there all the time for that. Like those people are always looking for people to help out. And I got so much out of that. Like it to the point where it was almost this, you know, could be viewed as a selfish thing to do because I just got so much joy and pleasure out of being part of that group and working with these young people and like seeing the incredible progress that they made over the 4 days. Like I got so much out of it that even though it's quote unquote volunteering, like it gave me so much benefit. And I think that is often an underlooked thing about volunteering is that you get personally so much out of it. And the research backs that up. So I found from a doctor, Dr. Stephen G. Post, PhD, he wrote a paper in June of 2014 called It's Good to Be Good. And he quotes some statistics about declining levels of happiness, particularly in some groups of Americans, off the back of Gallup studies that they've been doing. So Gallup are a big polling organization. So this is huge sample sizes that they're dealing with, and they're finding this trend of stagnation or declining happiness. And they were comparing between 2008, when there was a global financial crisis, and 2014, and they found that people were no happier. So you'd think happiness really would have bottomed out in the middle of a financial crisis, but people were not happier 6 years later. So in a survey of 4,500 American adults, 18 and older, they found that 96% of volunteers report feeling happier as a result. 68% agreed that volunteering has made them physically healthier. 92% agreed that it enriches my sense of purpose in life, which is a huge thing associated with happiness, is having a purpose, having a reason to be around. 89% said that it's improved my sense of well-being. 73% said that it lowers my stress level. 96% said volunteering makes people happier. So these are huge, massive majorities of people. 77% said that it improves my emotional health, and 78% said that it helps recovery from loss and disappointment, which is a really interesting stat. So it could be as simple as an unorganized form of volunteering, hanging your head over your neighbor's fence and just seeing if they need anything, if you want to make a meal for someone you know in your community. Needs one, texting someone who you know is having not such a great time at the moment. Giving blood is something that I've been doing for ages. I unfortunately had to stop when I cut down on animal products because my iron levels went down. But like giving blood is so useful and really easy.
And can I also just add that you've got to have a certain level of... Well, put it this way, people who are more likely to volunteer will be people who are more likely to think that they've got a contribution to make. So I guess just a shout out to those people who actually feel that they don't have a contribution or that no one would want them. It's just not true.
It really isn't.
It isn't. It's like everyone, all in your head. You're awesome.
Everyone has something to give and contribute to other people. at a minimum, you have blood. That can be your starting point.
See,
baseline.
There you go. I knew there was something in it.
But you know, it sounds silly. But then again, you donating blood, literally just the thing that is rolling around
and
in your body,
not,
will save, yeah. like literally save lives.
And not everyone can donate blood either.
Not everyone
actually.
Can. Yeah, yep, totally.
And also conservation volunteers, they're really nice, easy. Like if you're a bit worried about what sort of a contribution you might be able to make, or if you want something that's just like easy in, easy out, check out Conservation Volunteers New Zealand.
Awesome.
And you just go do a tree planting day or a litter cleanup or whatever, all over New Zealand.
Yeah. That's great. Do we have any other stuff we want to cover?
Well, the old happiness tips thing does make me a bit nervous, because it's like, well, the old self-help books, as we know, they've got some really powerful tools. But, and yeah, it's, of course, it's really likely, I think, some of the stuff we've been talking about is that there are obtainable things we can do to make ourselves happier. But I think we also need to look at our context, because some of our contexts aren't as conducive to happiness as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would actually like to just, I guess, finish off by highlighting how being happy isn't just something to do with our experiences or our situation. It's our choices or our attitudes. It's actually actually a big, and I don't know what the actual chunk is. I don't suppose anybody can know, but you know, like in New Zealand, over 8% of New Zealanders in the last 4 weeks are likely to have experienced a high level of psychological distress.
Wow.
That's really high,
that's
eh?
Huge.
And so some of those people will be people we're actually talking to right now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've got the highest teen suicide rate in the OECD in mm-hmm. New Zealand, as well as generally high suicide rates. And also, arguably, because I've found research on either side of this, but happiness is quite tied to income and connection, definitely. And it really depends what side of colonialism you fall on as well. Like
totally.
These big picture stuff, things that don't have quick fixes.
Yeah.
And I guess there's also, you know, large events, obviously, that what we've had unraveling on us in the last few weeks, the earthquakes in Christchurch, the mosque shootings, these are, you know, local things that affected us. And to talk about happiness again, it's just, I mean, we could just be in bad situations, even personally, with loved ones or work or death. So it could be that there's a time and a place as well for maybe this just isn't your time to
totally.
Be.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to grieve, or maybe it's time to be making some hard choices.
Mm-hmm.
And then stepping it out a bit further, I'm not going to dig deep into this stuff, but I do think it's like if we're aware of things, we've got more opportunity to make choices about what we want to step out of and or step into. And so looking on a national level, you know, it's easier to be happy in Sweden than it is to be happy in Russia, statistically. And it's actually easier to be happier in New Zealand, quite significantly, than it is easier to be happy in Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I would not have
anticipated
that.
It's interesting that, you know, and if we can talk about all these wonderful things you can do to be happy, but that's one thing a Westerner talking about that versus, you know, trying to convince someone making your own clothes in a sweatshop
mm-hmm.
somewhere that they should be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously context is a huge thing. And then just taking it out, I feel like it's a, you know, a circle that's getting larger and larger as we sort of take it out, because we've started with us and internal things. And if I could just, I guess, finish off by talking really globally about the human population, particularly in the West, that we're getting more obese, more lonely, more depressed, and more medicated. These are all trends. And just on balance, you mentioned the Gallup report, but there's also the International Happiness Survey, an annual survey, which is also another huge survey. I can put the links into that, showing that there are still really high levels of self-reported happiness. In fact, they're saying it's slowly on the creep up, and that we all have a tendency to under-report, to assume that other people aren't as happy as we are. So,
huh.
Yeah, so it's quite weird.
It's such an interesting fact.
Yeah, it is. And I, but I guess, whatever is going on statistically, there's definitely a benefit to unpacking what normal is, I think.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Like the collective things that we do or think that aren't perhaps conducive to happiness, but we don't even analyze them because we just think it's normal. So materialism is a massive thing. That desire to own things and that belief that owning it is going to make us happy, which we've kind of touched on already. It's like, is that even true? There's something really human about whatever context we're in, striving to be in a better situation.
Mm.
But it's also something that probably isn't helpful. And I think it's something that we're pulled into more than we realize. And a part of that is
sort of like a wider sense of keeping up with the Joneses, wanting the bigger house, the flashier car, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that is this context we're all in around growth being normal and change being normal and progress being normal. If I sort of think, I'm not into all of that or whatever. But if I look at my life and the way I live it, I'm so sucked into thinking about, I've kind of got my situation now and constantly embedded in that as a little overlay of what it could be if I could just do X, Y, Z and then what in 5 years time, I'll be great because I'll have this or that or do this or that or I'll be this or that. And it's like that is so normal in our context, but it's like if I go back a few generations, the fact that someone could have been born, grow up, have their kids or whatever and die all without really experiencing any shifts, and they might just live in the same house and not ever occur to them that they could renovate it or walk into a room and go, oh, I could see how I could improve this room.
Yeah. And there's a balance to be struck there because we do have it in our power to improve our circumstances, which can bring happiness, but that relentless pursuit of improvement for its own sake can be quite a empty endeavor.
Well, I guess none of the things I'm saying are intrinsically bad. I just want to encourage people to become aware of some of this background stuff that we just don't even often think of as being there.
Yeah,
we just think, oh, that's just normal.
We take it
it's normal
granted.
To change.
I think that we've been conditioned to think like that a lot because of. We get trained from birth, from the news and from governments, think about like GDP, things like that, that everything's got to constantly be growing. We've got to maintain 3% growth every year forever of economic growth.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that doesn't seem
and then that's
feasible forever.
Yeah. And then the overlay of technology as well. Like that's shifting. That's all just been part of life and we just expect that to be different in 5 years or even a year's time. So there's not much stability in terms of we don't have any expectation that the future is going to look similar to what it is now. Whereas, and again, not good or bad, but a few hundred years ago, or going back to the hunter-gatherers, they were the opposite. They totally expected stability, and people just got more and more revered as they got older because they learned more and more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we have this opposite thing where the younger you are, the more you know,
the more
you understand stuff. And there's that sense of loss as you get older of going, oh, I'm getting a bit out of it or I'm getting a bit out of the loop.
I'm 32. I don't understand what's going on with technology and stuff anymore.
Well, you would have been an old man back in the hunter-gatherer days. Mm. Yeah.
So do we – here's an idea to round off this episode. Do you want to pick like three things that you reckon people should focus on? Or maybe we could do two each that you really want people to carry forward?
No, I don't know. I don't have anything like that.
You had a list of 10 stellar recommendations up the top and another list of your own personal stuff.
Yeah. What do I really think people should focus on? Oh, like the two that you pulled out.
Physical exercise and volunteering?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I have... It just feels like such dicey ground, the whole giving advice thing. I like the fact that I've thrown out a really broad range of things that people can
sure
pick from. or accept or just not.
Cool. Do you want to have a crack at a wrap up then? Because I just feel like it got a bit negative at the end. I'd like to bring it back.
Yeah. It has gotten a bit negative at the end. So anyway, those are, I guess, more slow burners, just thoughts to ponder. And yeah, if we bring it back to the happier part of the podcast, we were actually dwelling on what it is that can genuinely make us happy. I really liked what you said, Tim, around caring for others and volunteering. So because it's a time filler as well. It allows us that chance to connect with others instead of going to a mall.
Totally.
Yeah, and exercise. Yeah, you're a genius. You know, one thing that isn't on my list, but I just thought was a random thing. A friend sent me a snail mail letter a while ago, and I was like, what is this thing? And I haven't done it because, of course, you know, a bit too frenetic. But I think that's pretty cool.
Write a letter.
Yeah, actually, just write a letter and post it to someone.
I only get them for wedding invitations and wedding thank yous now, and they're so nice to receive.
It's always so exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. Getting something in the mail.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I love it.
So don't worry about all that existential stuff.
Just write a letter.
Yeah, just go snail mail.
Well, thank you for all the research that you did for this episode, Wave. I think that was a really cool episode to do and to just spend a bit of time talking about this stuff, because I think it is critically important but often overlooked, because there's always something bigger and more pressing going
on. Yeah, yeah. And in this space too, eh? Like people listening to this podcast probably a bit more tuned into impending ecological issues, I guess you'd say, in the future. So, yeah, it's great to think about ways that we can just carry on with the mental health and do those nice things for ourselves and for others. Be nice human, one. Being human.
We Amen. Will get back to regularly scheduled programming in the next episode. Thanks for joining us. Please share this episode with people who you think might benefit from hearing it, which I reckon is everyone. Share it with everyone.
Everyone.
And we'll catch you in the next episode of How to Save the World.
Ka kite.